Hi guys, welcome back to the Ring Rants, Reflections and Ratings with me, Tris Dixon. I'm joined by Dougie Fisher and Tom Gray. As always, gents, how are we?
Good.
We're good. Happy Easter, everybody.
Yeah, you guys too.
Guys, we have a lot to get through. There's a ton of stuff that's just been going on this week, and there's a ton of stuff coming up. We'll start just with a little bit of reflection about Errol Spence, who beat your Dennis Ugas last night. Tom, no surprise. What do you make of that, and how does that leave the welterweights?
Terrific performance by Spence, but he did do what I expected, although I thought it would go the full 12-round distance, which it probably would have if Ugas didn't sustain such a nasty eye injury. But I thought Spence controlled that entire fight, with the exception of when he made a mistake in the sixth round, got clipped, get shaken up, which there was a bit of like miscommunication, I think, between the two fighters and the referee that perhaps caused that, but he still gets shaken up. I felt Ugas should have went gung-ho at that point because he'd lost five rounds on the spin. That he, you know, Spence fought his way back, took over the rest of the fight, got the stoppage. And I think now I've flipped on my opinion on the ratings panel to Crawford at number one. Coming off a performance like that, I think Spence goes back on top. That's my opinion.
Dougie, are you drinking from the Spence Kool-Aid this week?
I listen, I'm a Spence believer again. I had my skepticism following the car accident, and the inactivity, the retina issue with his eye. I had questions about him, and he answered those questions against your Dennis Ugas. I favored Spence to win this fight, but I did think it was going to go the distance, and I thought it would take him some rounds to get into his rhythm, to get into his groove, to recapture that relentless form if it was still there. But he was relentless from the get-go. And he wasn't just busy. It wasn't sheer volume. He was precise. He was surgical. The technical precision is still there. He doesn't waste punches. He's an amazing fighter. I mean, he's an aggressive fighter, but he's an excellent boxer from mid-range. He can move when he wants to. Generally speaking, he doesn't have to, because he blocks and slips and parries punches very, very well. But he's also just so physically strong. His offense, in effect, is his defense. And his offense is what put your Dennis Ugas sort of in a shell. I'll say it like that. It kind of reminded me of when Manny Pacquiao fought Joshua Clottie. Clottie was just waiting. Okay, he's letting his hands go. He's going to get tired. There's going to be a break in this action, and I can counter him. I can get my shots in. And there are a few breaks in the action, but not many. And the thing about Spence is, if you hit him with just one good shot, he's going to hit you back with three or four. And that's what was happening all night, is that Ugas occasionally would land a good counter right hand or go well to the body with one or two shots, but then he had to be right back into that shell. And really, his entire body just took a beating. And I think from the fourth round on, that right eye, that swelling began early in the fight. And it was a good stoppage. And even without the swelling, I think the fight would have been stopped. I don't think that Ugas had it in his body to go the full 12. And even if he wanted to, he shouldn't have had to do that. That was just too much punishment from Spence. So yeah, I'm back on the Spence bandwagon. And I think I agree with Tom that he deserves to be Ring Magazine's number one rated welterweight.
Interesting. One word answer on this, both guys. Does Spence Crawford happen this year, Tom?
No. I've been let
Dougie?
down too many times, so.
Yes, I say it happens.
Okay.
I don't think Spence would have mentioned his name if they didn't have plans to face him this year.
Good point. I hope I'm
And I
wrong. I
don't
hope
think
Doug's
there's
right.
anybody for Spence to fight, and I don't think there's anybody for Crawford to fight. I
They've
think it's
cleaned out.
finally
They've
time. Yeah.
cleaned out both sides of the street.
You're right.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, while we're talking about 147, there was an impressive performance over here last night with Nigel Benn's son Connor. Although I suppose we're going depending on your generation, Connor Benn is no, Nigel's Connor's dad, as opposed to me saying that Connor's not Nigel's son. Depends on what era you're from, I guess. But hey, Long story short, he looked impressive. Chris Van Heerden might have seen better days. He might have had a lot of wars in LA, you suggest, in those gyms over there.
Yes.
Dougie, impressed with Connor? And where do you think he's going to wind up a year or so from now?
I am impressed, and I'm somebody who didn't think his career was going to go anywhere. When I first saw him, maybe the first two or three fights, I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, this is an itch that he has to scratch. His father is a famous boxer. He has a little bit of athletic ability, but he'll learn that boxing is not the sport for him. And here he is. He's ranked number 10 by Ring Magazine. And I think that performance defended that ranking. I think it was questionable whether or not we should have allowed him to crack the ring welterweight rankings, because there's a lot of deserving welterweights out there, a lot of really good young up-and-comers. But it's not that he beat Chris Van Heerden. It's the way he beat Van Heerden. Van Heerden is not a guy you blow out in two rounds.
And you could say that about Algeri, too. You could say that about Algeri now, back-to-back wins. Yeah,
and and listen, having said that, there's a reason these guys were selected to fight Ben. Ben is a guy, he did not have an amateur background, so he's basically learning on the job. He has to be a slow developing project. He's 6 years a pro. He might not be ready for a legit contender until 7 years. He might not be ready for a world title until 7.5, 8 years. We don't know, but I will say this, and I tweeted this, and I got a good response, and I got a lot of negative responses. He's dangerous. I think the punching power is real. And I like his punch selection once he gets in close. And with his stature and his reach, he has to get in close. But that makes for compelling fights.
Sure. Tom, where would you go next with him? I mean, the talk is obviously of Amir Khan was in the ring, and there's talk of him fighting Kell Brook next. Mm-hmm. Do you think either of those are good fights and the right fights for him?
I think the Kell Brook fight is a good fight. I was ringside in Manchester for Brook and Khan. And to me, Amir Khan is at the end, completely at the end. I mean, I see no benefit to, like Doug said, he's ranked, Ben's rated number 10 at welterweight. Why fight Amir Khan? I get that there might, you know, they might be able to regurgitate Amir and put on a great show and make it pay-per-view and get the big Battle of Britain going, the usual stuff. But to me, that fight's no use. Kell Brook is an interesting fight. I would love to see that, because Kell had a great performance against Amir Khan. So that, to me, is more the fight. But from what I hear, Kell has kind of priced himself out on it. £10 million, if that number is correct, is miles away from reality. And the fight I'd like, but that won't happen, is I think he's ready for someone like a Keith Thurman, who is not in his prime any longer, but he's still, off his last performance, he's still functional. That's a good fight, but the whole PBC and matchroom relationship, or lack of it, precludes that from happening. Adrian Broner, I would watch. I see a lot of people think that Adrian Broner beats Conor Benn. Not for me. I think Conor Benn smashes him to smithereens. I don't care how hard Adrian Broner's working in the gym. His punch output to anything above 135 pounds is anemic. You know, he just does not throw enough punches. And against a guy like Ben, he's just going to chase him and chase him and chase him and make him work. And I think he would stop him.
But it is a step up. It is a step up.
It is a step up. It is a step up.
And Broner can help sell a fight. That's a fight that will attract attention on this side of the pond because of Broner's long career.
Absolutely.
And his antics and his personality. And he is tough. He's never been stopped. And he's got a little bit more on his punches than a Chris Algieri or
absolutely. Chris Van Heerden.
Yeah. I think I think that's the standout fight for me at the moment, the Broner one, the clash in personalities, the clash in styles. I think he might even be able to, you know, Conor is quite a bullish guy. I don't want to call him a kid, but he's a bullish guy. And I think that he might struggle with Broner's mind games a little bit, you know, and I think that it might be one of those where he'd have to be put in a disciplined performance and not try and lose his head. And I think there'd be a lot to learn from having a fight like that at this stage.
Yeah.
Right, guys, so just moving ahead, by the way, I will say I saw that we had a comment last week for not discussing the Fondura fight with Lubin, and I mean, obviously, what one thing is, just for context, is this is like a very quick overview of like the previous week and what's coming up. I mean, we're not dissecting anything and everything, we're selecting a few bits, but obviously there's so much thorough coverage over at the Ring's website. So obviously if you do miss if there is a fight that we haven't talked about on here, it will be over on the Ring's website. So guys, just go and check it out on there. And same thing, obviously, print publication coming out. Guys, can you give us a clue as to what the cover story is, by the way, that you're working on? You couldn't say last week.
Doug, it's up to you. You're the boss.
Yeah, let's wait a week on that. It's current. It's current. Okay. It's a special issue, but it's not a special issue. So we're covering what's happening in the boxing world right now, and the biggest story, not just in boxing, but the biggest story out there in the world right now. But I'd like to just we worked real hard on that 100 greatest fighters greatest punchers. Yeah. The past 100 years. So let's keep it in the spotlight.
Yeah.
Anybody who doesn't have that, if you're not a subscriber, if they don't sell Ring Magazine and the newsstands around your area, go to ringtv.com, go to Ring Shop and purchase your copy. It's a collector's issue for sure.
Ringmagshop.com.
There you go. All right, guys. And then obviously flipping ahead to this week, we're looking at Tom, you're coming down for it. I'm 50-50 about whether I go to it. It's Tyson Fury at Wembley against Dillian White. It's a good fight. I'm looking forward to the fight. It's not your token homecoming. I remember I was at Dougie, you were probably there as well, when Oscar had his homecoming fight against Stevie Forbes. Like, obviously that was like a non-risk homecoming. Like, there's risk attached to this fight. It's a real fight. You know, Dillian White, you know, if you don't have him in the top five heavyweights, you have him in the top 10 for sure. And I mean this like in terms of a fan perspective. He's a guy who's kept busy at a high level as he's waited for his shot. And finally, after all this time, he's got his shot. I am excited for the fight. Let's not talk about the undercard as such, but I'm excited for the fight, very much so. Dougie, what's the take on it in the US? Obviously, Dillian White's been quiet in the build-up, hardly said a word apart from a very
suspect conference call. That's the take. From hardcore fans, it's like, where's the promotion? Where's the buzz? They feel like with the personalities of both Fury and White, that this is a fight that should have been in the spotlight or should have been in our consciousness for several weeks now. Really, you know, I think Americans were expecting a lot of back and forth, you know, just verbal jabs between Team Fury and Team White, or, you know, between Fury and White. And it's been really quiet. And, you know, I'm sure on fight night, or it'll be in the afternoon for us, everybody will be dialed in. We'll be into it. I think you're going to have a lot of last minute upset specials ordered via social media. You have a lot of people saying, Dillian White's going to take them. I'm looking at Fury's resume. He's got Klitschko, he's got Wilder, and then it's really thin, whereas Dillian White is battle-tested. Yeah, he's had some setbacks, but he comes back from those setbacks. He's got good reach, he's got good speed, he's got a hammer of a right and a good hook, and he's a good body puncher. You know what? Dillian is a live dog in this. I favor Tyson because of his versatility, because of his winning attitude. He just has this mentality of he will not be defeated in there. And, you know, we can't question Tyson Fury's resilience. You know, if you can survive home run hits from Deontay Wilder, you can pretty much take any punch. But it's an interesting style matchup. And because of White's aggressive technique, I think it promises to be an entertaining fight. Sometimes Fury can stink it out if he wants to. You know, he can be a switch hitter. He can be a giant stick and mover in there. But I think the way their personalities are going to mesh in the ring, I think it's going to be an entertaining fight.
Tom, when you're ringside on Saturday night next week and the bell goes, how excited are you going to be for what you're going to see?
The occasion, I think, at least for now, and I could, you know, I could love to regret these words, but I think the occasion will supersede the actual fight itself. I think that Fury is stylistic hell for Dillian White. I think Dillian, to me, for a man of his size, it's like the power's there, obviously, and you know he's got good punching power. Obviously, he's knocked guys spark out, but it's the coordination to me is way off, and that's what Fury has in abundance. His movement, the way he moves, I just think he can have a field day here. But Tyson is prone to making unforced errors. You know, the third Wilder fight was fight of the year, but Tyson underperformed in that fight for me. I don't think the fight should have been anywhere near as competitive as that, given what he'd done to him the second time. So, you know, you don't want to take this thing where, because Deontay Wilder put him over and he got up, I think it depends. He could get caught with something really, really stupid, and this time he does get put away. So he needs to watch himself, because to me, Dillian Whyte only has a puncher's chance.
I think it's interesting. One of the things I've heard quite a few boxing people say, and I mean, when I say boxing people, I actually mean fighters, say that Dillian Whyte is a few marks up on Derek Chisora, who he had two tough fights with. And obviously, you know, Fury really played with Chisora, certainly in the rematch. I think he boxed him southpaw the entire way through, didn't he? He just didn't to get out of second gear. So, I mean, if that's the case, then it could be a very dull and unexciting fight. I don't get that feeling. I've got, you know, sometimes you get a sense of, I've got a feeling this is going to be decent, you know.
And plus, Tyson is fighting with a different style now. He's not all around the ring, using the perimeter of the ring and boxing off the target and just basically looking to nullify opponents, which is what he did with Chisora. He was just too long, too mobile for him. And you know, Chisora couldn't get anywhere near him. And Chisora wouldn't close the gap on him either. So Tyson was obviously hitting with enough pop to put him off. But now Tyson's standing there a lot more. That's why Wilder got him over in the third fight. He was obviously down in the first fight as well, but, you know, seriously shaken up. And that's because he is holding his feet more often. And to me, that's the chance that Dillian has, is catching him with something really stupid.
The Kronk style. He is sitting on his punches more. Sugar Hill wants him to use his size, just like Emmanuel Stewart wanted Lennox Lewis and Vladimir Klitschko. You know, if you're that big, don't stay out on the outside. I mean, if you can box effectively from the outside, do it, but punch with authority from the outside. Let your right hand go, make a nice tight fist, and make your, you know, make it arrow straight. You know, be as technically clean as you can, but on the inside, tie this guy up and weigh on him. If you're the bigger, heavier guy, you know, the thing is Dillian Whyte is a big guy. And I would say Dillian Whyte is a more competent and more complete boxer than Deontay Wilder. Obviously he doesn't hit like Deontay Wilder. I don't know if he has Deontay Wilder's mettle, although he seems to. I mean, he's been in tough fights. We've seen him, you know, even that breakout loss against Anthony Joshua all those years ago. To me, he showed a lot of heart in that, but he showed obviously grit in his fights with Derek Chisora and other fighters. So I do think he has heart. Will he take as much punishment as Deontay Wilder was willing to take? That remains to be seen. But if it does get into that kind of back and forth, and I am thinking, because these guys haven't been able to, you know, they haven't been at it, you know, via social media, or they haven't been talking a lot of shit to each other in the buildup to this fight, maybe they save it for in the ring and they start, you know, talking to each other and getting under their skin that way. And that encourages more exchanges. And, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility for Whyte to clip Tyson Fury in an exchange.
I think it's been quite well documented over here, Dougie. You know, Dillian Whyte hasn't played ball in the buildup. I think there's been loads of issues between, Fury's team and Whyte's team behind the scenes about minor details of the contract, but stuff where people do want to have the edge in the contract one way, shape or form. So long story short is Dillian Whyte hasn't done much media at all. He did a conference call last Thursday or Friday night, which was, which was a bit of a sham call because there weren't many serious questions on it for either fighter. Even though there were sort of 100 journalists on there, we'll come on to that in a sec. So really, there's not been the usual back and forth. Tyson did a big media day when they announced the fight, and everyone sort of had their bits to run with from then. And then Tyson's obviously gone away and trained hard for this fight up in Morecambe. Dillian's been in Portugal training for this fight. I think he comes over obviously early this week.
And, but Dillian's silence has been spiteful, right? He's unhappy with something. In regards to the promotion, he's just like, I'm not going to help.
But yeah, and also it's not his show, it's not his promoters, it's not his network. So I think he just thinks, well, why should I just get involved? So I think there's a lot of reasons why he's not doing it. Long story short, I think the promotion suffered. I don't necessarily, well, the gate certainly hasn't. There's going to be 94,000 people, and I don't think the pay-per-view will either. So I mentioned this call the other day. Obviously, the main thing that everyone wanted to ask was about Fury's advisor, Daniel Kinahan, who is now wanted by the US Treasury and different government agencies in the UK, Ireland, Europe, and now America. So it's a really big, it's been a really big story. There's a $5 million reward for information about Daniel, his brother, and his father. And obviously he's been known to be Tyson's advisor for several years. And, you know, people on the conference call wanted to speak to Tyson about this. And there were several journalists asked to ask a few questions. Not one person asked Tyson about it. And that was that. So now we're coming into fight week and there's a lot of talk just about the management side of things and what's going on behind the scenes. Yeah, and I mean, one thing I will say is, Kinahan has no convictions. He's not been charged with anything. But the authorities want to speak to him for numerous things, not least being a very high up crime boss. So yeah, Dougie, what do you make of that? And how is it taking attention away from the fight at all?
No, I actually think it's actually shining some attention on the fight here in the U.S. Nobody was talking about it. So now they're talking about Kinahan, which leads to Fury, which leads to Fury versus Dillian White. So maybe it's not a bad thing. My take is that it's not something that casual fans are interested in or think about, because I hate to say it, a lot of casual fans just assume that boxing is a corrupt sport and that there's lots of people who are affiliated with organized crime just because of its history. You know, there was a point, you know, like in the 30s, 40s, 50s, even into the 60s, where there were like real US-based crime lords, organized crime figures that were entrenched in boxing, in the business of boxing. Obviously, that's not the case anymore, but that's still how a lot of people look at boxing. And I'll add this, there have been some very prominent managers and advisors. Jay Prince is one of them, who was involved for several years with Floyd Mayweather, and also in the career of Diego Corrales and Andre Ward. Okay. You can just Google Jay Prince. I mean, if you ask him, what does he do? He'll say, you know, I'm a hip hop impresario. I'm a music mogul. I run Rap-A-Lot Records or whatever. But he was involved in other things. And like I say, if you just Google it, you'll see he had cases, as they say out here. And it's just one of those things where it's kind of like, okay, you know, and I can think of a number of managers or of a number of world-class former world title holders who their money did not come from legit sources. And who knows, you know, if their involvement in boxing was to launder money, or I think this is the case, they're just huge boxing fans and they wanted to be involved in boxing, and boxing it doesn't have any filters. You can be an absolute failure and a failure in a corrupt way in another industry, and boxing will welcome you with open arms if you've got the cash, if you've got money. And I've seen this a lot with folks from, like, you know, the music industry and the entertainment industry or whatever. They come over to boxing and they're like, wow, there's not a lot of rules here.
Yeah,
and they do just fine. So, I mean, for me, you know, with Kinahan, it's kind of old news, and it's something that, you know, we've had people write about it on our website. We've had podcasts hosted on our website with Irish journalists who really took a deep dive into Kinahan and his past. And that stuff's still available on ringtv.com. But I don't know how much new news there is on Kinahan and his
relationship. It's huge. I mean, the American thing is huge. When you think of, obviously, so if just for example, one champion, Sonny Edwards, the IBF world champion, right? The IBF is based in New Jersey, right? With Darryl Peoples. Well, now Kinahan can't deal with anyone in America, but he's Sonny Edwards' advisor. So that's just one small example, even before you get into the weeds with TV networks and deals and contracts and stuff. So obviously, Bob Arum started to distance himself from Kinahan last week. What's your take on that? And Bob saying what he said.
Bob's a former attorney, right? So, you know, once a $5 million bounty comes out and the DEA is involved and it's the US government and all the rest of it, yeah, I mean, I would have expected this from Bob Arum. He's been more outspoken about it, gave an interview. I can't remember. Was it to Kevin? It was Kevin, right? Kevin Ailey?
Kevin
Ailey. Yeah, where he's basically saying, you know, we're out of here. We're not dealing with him anymore, and just made that clear. He also said that Tyson was seeking legal advice, and I think he mentioned that Josh Taylor was too. But I expect people to be walking away, but realistically, Tris, and you know this as well as me, in fact, you know it better than me, but, you know, boxing is complicit in its own black eyes here. I mean, this role of advisor that was created is basically because he can't get a manager's license. So you give him a role. Now, an advisor, by inference, provides advice, but Daniel Kinahan has been operating with boxing's major power brokers, broadcasters, promoters, the best fighters in the world, and helping, if not solidifying, deals. That's not an advisor. That's someone that's basically in charge, in my eyes. So the whole advisor thing, I think, is what's caused it. It's interesting the take that people have had. Some are still supporting him. Key figures in boxing still supporting Daniel Kinahan. And some are deleting every third tweet that they've basically been sending out for the last couple of years. So that's been an interest. It's interesting to see what the response has been like. Some guy, can't remember his name, in the UFC, basically praised him last night after winning a fight. And a journalist went after him at the press conference. Alan, yeah. Blanking on his surname, apologies, Alan.
Alan Dawson.
Yeah, Alan Dawson, who's a really good journalist. But he went after him at the press conference, and then the whole room froze, as if, why are you asking about this? But the bottom line is, the guy mentioned it in a post-fight interview, so what do you expect the journalist to do? So, yeah, it's to be honest, some of it, Tris, there's nothing funny about this. It involves murder and death and you know, drugs and just horrible stuff. And it's allegations. I just want to make that clear. But some of it is honestly like a Monty Python sketch or a National Lampoon's movie, some of the stuff that's going down. And it's getting to the point where I'm scared to look at my phone.
It's just, yeah, it's just such a bad look for the sport, like, into, you know, just to have any of these links at all. It's just not great for the sport, you know. And I know that other sports have their issues as well, but, like, I can't say it enough. And Dougie, I'm going to pull you on this a little bit. Just because Blinken Palermo and Frankie Carbo were running riot in the 1950s doesn't mean we'd need it in today's society in 2020.
No, you know,
You know, there's a reason why, you know, those guys wound up in prison. And it wasn't because they were good for boxing.
I think Doug was referring to, you know, the way people perceive it. People that are not thinking beyond that. But,
they figure it's prevalent. So what's the big deal? Another thing. I think if you're based in the UK, you've probably read more, you've heard more on the radio about him. There's been, you know, little documentaries produced. You've watched things on television that have educated you about Kinahan's background, and we haven't had that in the US.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I saw there was something in the New York Times last week about it, and some CNN have picked it up this week. So obviously, because of those sanctions now in the US, it's becoming bigger over there, I'm sure. It's interesting. My prediction this week is that Tyson gets in early with a statement, a prepared statement, very manicured statement, and says, all right, nothing else for the rest of the week. That's all you're going to get. And we'll just have to see how it goes from there. I think, but you know, that's the story going into fight week, and it's interesting. You know, it's another thread for the journalists to pick at. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's almost like the White Fury thing is the subplot this week to the main story. But we'll see how it all shakes out, guys. I think that's a little bit too serious to finish with a ring rant this week. I mean, and there's a little bit of a rant in there about, you know, boxing structure and governance, and the fact that we've got to tighten this stuff up. We've got to start tighten this up for the sake of the fighters, for the sake of the sport. We need this thing where we've got a central, a global governing body, not just for the situation of rankings and all that kind of stuff, but for rules, regulations, suspensions, for medicals and all that kind of stuff. There's so much stuff that needs to come under one umbrella that just isn't happening. And that includes promoters' licenses, managers' licenses, trainers' licenses. and probably training courses for all of the above as well, because you don't need, as Tom alluded to, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to get in at the bottom floor. And I think more work and more needs to be done to educate people how to be good trainers, managers, promoters before they're actually given their wings to fly at the highest level in the sport.
Yeah, and if you have a criminal background, you should not be welcomed into the sport, even if you have money, even if you're going to bring a cash flow. It can't all be about money, because what we've seen, if you with international amateur boxing, the controversy with the organized crime connected to AIBA, that's the organization, right? Yeah. That's led to a lot of trouble with amateur boxing, losing it from the Olympics, right?
Exactly. So yeah, the stakes are high. Yeah. And we'll point out again that Kinahan's got no criminal convictions or anything like that. I think the thing that I'm interested in terms of comparisons, and it's more than the Palermo and Carbo stuff, is the Harold Smith thing in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And everyone sort of saying, oh, well, Harold was good to me and all the rest of it. And clearly Kinahan's been good to a lot of people in the sport, and they're very, very grateful to him. But yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out over the coming weeks and months. Obviously, there's some serious players involved in the authorities now globally trying to find out what's going on. So we'll see, and we'll leave it to them. They're the absolute pros. But guys, I'm looking forward to next week very much and recapping what's happened at Wembley. Tom, I might see you there. I might not. We'll see how things shake out this week. But yeah, thank you very much for your time, guys. Always appreciate it.
You're welcome, man. Take care.
See you guys.
Later.